does have it all. All of our pre-owned vehicles are Hubler Q certified, which include a 128-point vehicle inspection, a free Carfax vehicle history report, and two warranties. A two-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty and a 30-day, 1,000-mile comprehensive warranty. Visit any of our 13 locations today or click drivehubler.com. Hubler has it
all. Previously on the Wake Up Call with KB and Andy. It's the Wake Up Call with KB and Andy on 93.5 and 107.5. The Fan.
Number two offensive rating team behind Boston as Middleton drawing some contact and is going to shoot free throws. And now some shoving underneath. Look out. It was Portis, I believe, and Nembhard.
Two acts by Portis. One is a push in the chest. The other one is a slap with contact to the head of Neymar. He has two technical fouls and is ejected.
Nesmith gets it ahead to Nembhard. Into the lane. That was a beautiful piece of work. Nembhard with the offhand left-hand pass, and Turner dunks. Indiana by four with the ball. Turner is open, but passed up a shot. Halliburton bounces once. Jackson sails by, and Halliburton hits a three left of center. Middleton, shot clock to one. He'll fade, and Nesmith blocked the shot. Here comes Halliburton on the break for three.
Saw that heat check coming.
Nembhard with it on top. Turner wants to do more damage, and he does. Another three from the left edge. The beleaguered Milwaukee Bucks call a timeout. The lead is back up to 14. Up the floor comes Siakam. He'll bounce away some clock way out on the left edge. Green is on him. Now a bounce pass to Halliburton. Halliburton to the foul line, into the corner. Turner is all alone and hits another three. That's the capper. Pacers are going to win game four. They're up 17 with 2 minutes and 10 seconds to play.
We made a decision after game one that no matter what, we were going to dictate the pace on makes, on misses, and that's really how we've, you know, created our identity the whole year. I think people know on makes, on misses, we're pushing the ball, and I think that that's important for us. So we've kind of got back to that in the last three games.
Could we get 6 hours of showtime today? Is that possible? Can we just go till noon, maybe? I feel like we need that to cover everything here on this Monday morning. A good Monday morning to you. Feels like summer outside. I am Kevin Bowen. That was Mark Dykton on that intro there. And Andy Sweeney with us as always. A lot to get to. The Pacers are up 3-1. The Colts have 9 new football players, and I would say checked off a lot of pre-draft goals. And oh yeah, it's the month of May later this week, so how about four-time Indy 500 champion Elio Castroneves joining us later in the show? Not bad for a Monday.
Yeah, I mean, does it get better? And if you wanna blow Greeny out of the way from 10 to 12, now Jake and Jimmy,
I don't think
might,
we get a lot of pushback from our local audience with that, if I can say that.
Jake and Jimmy may want to be on at noon to do what they do. But, man, a good morning to you guys and a good weekend. And, you know, you have talked about this with the Pacers this year. But when you have the two games on the weekend, you know, we're going to talk about a lot more, I would imagine, about last night's game, but we need to remember
that
freaking atmosphere on Friday.
I lost 6 years off my life from Friday night.
I'm sure your liver did. The people that were down there, I mean, just downtown was absolutely rocking, and Friday and then last night, the atmosphere's just unbelievable. I thought Friday was just a loony bin. That was the best way to put it. And this game, this series, KB, obviously is really, it's different. I don't know if it's difficult, but it's obviously a lot different with what's going on with Milwaukee. I mean, their injuries are absolute next level, but it was great to see Bobby Portis get tossed last night when his team needed him the most. Bobby Portis absolutely let his team down. The Pacers took advantage of it. You had a big-time dunk by Turner. I mean, Turner was fantastic. What can you say about him last night? But between that and the salmon shirt from Chris Ballard and the profanity lace tirade, what a weekend around here. It's fantastic, wasn't it? And it's May in a couple days, and it's going to be like 80 degrees out.
I was
going to
say, you couple all that with the weather, and I'm like, this is awesome. Yes, go till noon. I see the feedback from some people right now. No complaints, it sounds like, on that end. Unfortunately, we'll try to jam it all into 3 hours today. And it's so funny that you bring up game 3, Andy, because I'm sitting there watching it, and as soon as the game ends, I'm like, damn, we can't talk about that for another 48 hours. And there will be another game on top of it, which just inevitably all of a sudden means that game three gets pushed to back burner. But that was one of the crazier playoff games I've ever seen. The 1 minute and 18 second possession there, it looked like an Army-Navy drive in Andrew Nembhard getting offensive rebound after offensive rebound. And finally, you break them with the Tyrese Halliburton floater in the lane and the and one on Friday night. And then you fast forward to last night, and whether it's, you know, Middleton turning the ankle again, it's Portis getting ejected from the game, and you just laid it out perfectly in a game that you absolutely could not have that from a guy that, you know, last night he was one of their best players, if not their best player. He just looks like a total idiot in that moment after the officiating was wild those first few minutes in the technicals they gave Siakam, the technical they gave Patrick Beverley. You knew it was a quick whistle, clearly, and Portis still crosses the line and gets tossed. The Bucks are wounded. The Bucks are borderline dead, in my opinion. You could argue they are dead. I mean, I see no chance of them coming back in this series. But you know what? Credit to the Pacers for making them wounded. And you got to go back to the regular season. But what you did to them in winning 4 of 5, like, you got Adrian Griffin fired. If the Pacers don't do what they did to Milwaukee throughout the regular season, Doc Rivers is not on that sideline. And the general soap opera, I should say general hospital, feel to the Milwaukee season, it does not have as much turmoil. Like, you instigated, you started all of that with how you just beat them. Like, on the floor, healthy teams, et cetera, et cetera. And now, as the health continues to just deteriorate for them, you are applying body blow after body blow. And sure, last night was unbelievable. You brought up Turner in the fourth quarter, and just that moment, I think one of the cooler moments I've seen inside of Gainbridge Fieldhouse, just for him and everything he's been through as a Pacer. Nembhard, just an unbelievable hat tip to him. But Friday night, I thought that's when you really stepped on their throat in a very clunky way, a very, you know, chaotic moment. Like, you can't blow this, all those things, overtime, you know, crazy sort of back and forth. You get all these offensive rebounds. But I thought Friday night is really when you put the nail in the coffin with the Lillard injury, of course, on top of it.
Yeah, you know what's different to me in these two games? You know, they were so beat up with Lillard not playing at that point. And you have, you know, you have Middleton who re-injures his ankle, KB, halfway through that game last night. I mean, you're thinking he's done. I mean, are you not? You're thinking they're going to have guys on the floor right now that you literally have never seen. Giannis's brother got in the game, and he looked like he wanted to fight someone.
Yeah, he looked like he was going to do his Portis impression there.
There's a meme of a guy, people may not know this, like, it's on Instagram and stuff, where this guy goes to a bodybuilding competition and he walks by and he kind of shoves the bodybuilder guys and he's just a normal looking guy.
That was Thonis.
Yeah, that was Thonis. Like, settle down. You know, it's 2 minutes to go
he's
in the game.
He's the high school football player that's on the basketball team but knows nothing about basketball.
It's exactly what he is. It's exactly what he is. But, you know, the difference between me is I really last night wanted to see the Pacers put the Bucks' face in it. I mean, that's what I wanted them to see, to get done with them, to make it 3-1, to put them on the brink of elimination. And that's how I felt going into last night. And I don't even mind patting myself on the back. I told you game four, Bobby Portis was going to get in a fight. Do you remember last week, you guys? I know that sound won't get cut. Yeah. I said on game four, now, I thought it would be in the third quarter. I thought it'd be in the fourth quarter. You know, I thought it'd be in the second half.
That was early shower for him.
Not 7. I mean, the guy had 4 points and 3 rebounds, and they were going to
He had a nice start to the game.
7 minutes into the game. I mean, the guy was going to have 25 points and 15 rebounds if he would have stayed in the game. So I was much more mean and nasty last night. I thought Friday, there are championship players. I actually give the Bucks some credit. You know, Chris Middleton is a champion.
Oh, man.
He is a champion in this league. And the shots he was making were, hey, I'm a champion. We may go down, but I am going to go down doing every damn thing right I can do. I almost give Milwaukee credit with the resolve they played with on Friday.
Well, if they get Friday night, it's a totally different series.
Last night doesn't matter to them. They go back 2-2, and it's game 5 on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is at 9:30 on Tuesday. 9:30. It's a late one. But you get the Knicks and you get the Sixers the game before at 7 o'clock. And that series is
9:30 Eastern obviously sounds horrific. If I can give a little bit of good news, well, one, the Pacers are up 3-1. Two, it's not NBA TV.
It's not NBA TV.
So it'll be just like last night. You'll get TNT And yes, for some reason, I guess three Eastern Conference games all of a sudden pushes the one Central time zone team, aka Milwaukee, with a home game. It pushes them to 9:30 Eastern, 8:30 local. Again, that will be game five coming up. I don't know. We haven't gotten word of this, but watching her sprint across the court last night, Jenny Buschek, to get in the middle of Andrew Nembhard and Bobby Portis, that looks like a Chris Bauer draft pick. Did you see her sprint out there?
I did.
That was Usain Bolt.
It made me nervous.
She was a blur flying in there.
Well, you don't want to get anyone suspended.
No.
That's how you lose games. You get someone suspended because Bobby Portis is being a jackass.
Well, and honestly, I thought in that moment, Nembhard and Portis, you know, Portis probably more the demonstrative instigator. Nembhard has certainly had his moments.
Oh, sure he has.
In this series. But right there told you everything you needed to know about the psyche of these two teams. In a moment where, you know, obviously with Lillard out, maybe the need for Nembhard isn't as immense. But right now, those are two pretty important players.
Sure they are.
Certainly Portis to the Bucks, considering their health last night. And you had just gone 5 minutes into a game where, again, I have no idea why they were so whistle happy early on. The Siakam technical was a joke. The Beverly technical was a joke. I'm like, what are we doing here? But clearly, the refs were trying to send some sort of message early on. And in that moment, for Portis to cross the line, just shows you again everything you need to know about where the Bucks are right now and why they are, you know, literally packing their bags for Cancun as we speak.
And he did cross the line.
2X. I thought it was well said, and Mark, great job cutting that open. Yeah, there were 2X. And again, when you have officiated the first 6 minutes like you did, as soon as I saw the replay, I'm like, Portis is gone. I mean, like, there might be some officiating crews that would say, all right, double tech, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, that's it. No more BS. They had already told you that with the Siakam and the Nembhard techs early in that game. Or, excuse me, with the Siakam and Beverly techs. So, up 3-1, as Andy said, 9:30 for Game 5, and we'll see. It's quite possible Game 6 is not needed. If you want to look ahead a little bit, the Knicks, they are up 3-1. We could very well be getting Pacers and Knicks here in the Eastern Conference semifinals.
It's funny, yesterday, you know, it was beautiful out. You know, you're watching, you get the iPad on the porch, you know, you get the TV outside trying to do whatever you do. And I'm watching Sixers Knicks, and a buddy who texts me about it, and he's a Brunson hater. He's not a Pacer fan. He's a Brunson hater. And I'm like, dude, I mean, of all the guys on the team, you know, Jalen Brunson's obviously had a great game yesterday and such a great series, but he said, man, the Garden's rocking. And I go, you know that game is in Philly, right?
That was the Garden West.
I mean, that scene was unbelievable.
Yeah. I have a lot of respect for how the Knicks play. I know that's not like, I'm not allowed to say that.
No.
And I understand there should be and will be a lot of venom there from this fan base, which I love. But you watch them play, and there's just a blue-collar nature to how they play. And that game will be on Tuesday, by the way, their game five. So we could get, you know, by Tuesday night, we could have Pacers and Knicks done with their respective series. The Knicks will obviously try to go for the clinch back at home. The Pacers will try to do it on the road. We'll sprinkle in draft coverage today and honestly throughout the week. You know, Andy, I was telling you before the show, it's one of those things where, you know, with how the draft unfolds, 8 of the 9 picks happen after our final show of the week, and I'm like, boy, how do we just like go over all of these picks? So we'll continue to, you know, dive deeper into each of them, but just generally, your thoughts on Chris Ballard's draft here in 2024.
Well, I mean, picking up Mitchell as, you know, wide receiver, we'll play some of that sound as we
AD
go today.
Mitchell, for those that missed that.
I mean, you know, he fell to them, and that, you know, we'll get to this at 7:30, but the whole Ballard tirade about unnamed sources and Steichen and
a little Hollywood act from Chris Ballard there?
Just a little bit. Jim Bob Cooter, and I know a bunch of guys went down there to Texas to go see him, Xavier Worthy, and other guys there. So they do, in round two, get a wide receiver. Watching that live, I was a little bit worried they weren't going to get one.
Did the trade back make you nervous?
Yes, it did make me nervous. And it wasn't a surprise, you know, knowing with what you have told me and, you know, obviously the Colts fans here about Chris Ballard, it wasn't surprising. The other thing going, you know, going third round and fourth round, back-to-back rounds, going offensive line, we've talked about it. You know, Ryan Kelly's going to be 32 years old. You know, he's going into the last year of his deal. Quinn Nelson, the injury issues that he's had. The Colts have an opt-out with his contract at the end of this year. Will Fries, for instance, back up there. He's going in to the last year of his deal. So Chris Ballard perhaps tipping his hand, looking for the offensive lineman of the future. Honestly, besides A.D. Mitchell, that was probably my takeaway, was replenishing the offensive line with some high picks in a third and a fourth rounder.
You know, Chris Ballard is really a man of his word when you think about it. Go back 10 days to that pre-draft press conference. And, you know, I tried to warn you going into that pre-draft presser because I think a lot of people get into those things. They're like, oh, it's smokescreen central.
Right.
These guys just lie. You go back to Ballard's comments. What do you say about the DBs?
Yeah, he says they've grown up.
Likes them.
Yeah, look what he
gave
what
you
he did.
No indication no. They would draft a defensive back.
He gave you a sixth round corner, which is, you know, iffy if that player is even going to do anything.
They don't take a DB till their seventh pick, their own seventh pick of the draft. He mentioned protecting Anthony Richardson first and foremost. Like you said, two of their top four picks goes to that position there. So those were the things that stood out. I do think, you know, I set out a goal list for the Colts pre-draft, and they really checked every single goal if you look at it. I do think the pick of a guy like A.D. Mitchell has got a lot of Reggie Wayne coach to it, of this is a salivating, oozing prospect. You watch the highlight film, Andy, and like it's mouthwatering watching the ease at which A.D. Mitchell makes some of these plays and makes some of these plays on the biggest stages in college football. This guy caught the game-winning touchdown as a true freshman. Just, 400 yards? Jenny Boucher could probably sprint from here to Lucas Oil in the same time it took A.D. Mitchell to get down the field for that touchdown against Alabama as a true freshman over at Lucas Oil. Again, five touchdowns in five playoff games. I mean, that is just crazy to think about it. But then why pick 52? Why just three games in his career over 80 yards?
Right.
You know, it's... So that's where the Reggie Wayne, that's where the Shane Steichen, both of them at the Pro Day, they obviously feel very good about it. It was one of the odder Zoom press conferences that I've probably ever seen with a draft prospect with him. And then certainly we'll get into all of day three, because I thought there was a really interesting pick in round five of, I don't think, if the rule change in the NFL doesn't happen with this kick return rule change, I don't think you see them.
They talked about
make the selection of Anthony Gould.
Yeah, they talked
out
about
of Oregon State in round five. So cannot wait to get into all of that. And like I said, to lead off the show, the one, the only, the four-time champ, Elio Castroneves. As we get to the month of May, Mark Dykton and Doug Bowles will be joining us on May 1, Wednesday. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, he will.
So we will have the great Doug Bowles on as Penske perfect. Looked pretty perfect yesterday down there at Barber. Quite the weekend for them. Scott McLaughlin, Will Power, finishing 1-2. Did you guys see the mannequin on the track?
I did see the mannequin on the track.
I first saw the video clip, I cannot tell you how uneasy I was when I saw, like, and I guess a mannequin, it looks real. The realness of it?
Yeah.
I cannot believe. Like, can you imagine being that driver?
Well, it's funny. It's the first thing I saw. I'm like, okay, well, that got me learning more about the race.
Well, that is true.
I'm like, that got me.
Hey, eyes are eyes, man. And right now IndyCar's got some eyes on them here as the month of May arrives later.
Yeah, I kind of like, you know, you mentioned Penske Perfect. They had the cheating scandal last week, and then they come back, and then they win as a team yesterday. And I'm like, I was thinking, these might be my guys. I might be set. I might have found someone in the month of May to cheer for here.
You're going to rock a cheaters always win shirt at Carb Day coming up here.
Exactly. Drinking the Gumball Head, your favorite beer. So we'll do all that again. Tony East also going to join us coming up at 9 o'clock. What did Rick Carlisle say, Pacers head coach, about the win last night? And we'll get you some of that Chris Ballard sound as well. It's a Monday, hanging out with you. It's the Wake Up Call, 93.5, 107.5 The Fan.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Is that a song for the Bucks as they walk off the floor?
No, we're talking Colts draft, the class of 2024. So I thought this is the graduation song of at least of my high school back in the day. So
ours was like Vitamin C.
We had Vitamin C too.
It's that one or it's the Green Day song. What's the name of the Green Day song?
Sure. Time of Your Life.
Yeah, the time of your life. Yeah, the Vitamin C song. What a crappy song.
I was like, where's Mark going with this? Shout out to Steven, actually coworker of my wife. He said he listens every morning with Charlotte and Amelia's two daughters on the way to school.
That's very nice.
You gotta love that. Again, we're hoping, fingers crossed.
I'm sure they're thrilled.
To have Caitlin Clark on the show here coming up later this week. We'll certainly keep you posted on that. Again, the Fever 2 weeks from tomorrow. Now, if the daughters are in the car for Steven, though, do we need to bleep out what we're about to play here, or do we have a handle on this?
I already bleeped it out. Don't worry. You're safe.
Do we get a cuss word count here?
I mean, we can do it. Oh, I think it's at 6, 7.
I was going to say 5.5 was going to be my over-under on curse words.
Chris Ballard is feeling himself up there at the...
he liked A.D. Mitchell as a pick, did he not?
At the podium. Well, if he really liked him, would he have taken him at 46 overall?
Fantastic point. Well, he knew he could move back.
Sure,
I swear, when he moved back, I'm like, he's not going to get a wide receiver in this second round. He's going to take a lineman, and everyone's going to be mad at Chris Ballard. Well, you want to play it here?
Well, he got lucky that at the time it was happening, it was like... peak Pacers.
Oh, yeah.
Like, are they going to blow this game?
Yeah. No. I mean, there was a lot going on. People like, listen. That probably went around. Like, people picked up their phones and saw that Ballard had a rant. And that, you know, it's fourth quarter of that game on game three. They probably put their phones away, at least to the timeout, to see what Ballard had to say.
Now, literally, the Pacers game went final. And that pick happened, like, less than 2 minutes after.
Trust
that.
Me.
It was crazy.
It is unbelievable.
It's like they timed that out perfectly.
You watch that game. It's a great game. The Pacers get the 2-1 series lead. It's a lunatic atmosphere there at Gamebridge. And then you hope 2 minutes later, like Mark said, that you get, you know, that you get the wide receiver who is going to be, you know, I will say a number one, but is going to be an explosive wide receiver. So they do get A.D. Mitchell from Texas. And now, what was the exact question that was asked, KB? Because you were there.
Yeah.
Was it just about off-the-field concerns?
Right, and I'm glad you brought this up from a context standpoint. I think two things stood out after the A.D. Mitchell pick. We were on the ESPN telecast, but I believe the NFL Network telecast had... ripping is probably too harsh of a statement, but like there were definitely some comments about why he fell to 52... questions about, again, this is not like when you bring up red flags, to me, it's like, I feel like people often go straight to like criminal red flags. And I don't think it's necessarily that with A.D. Mitchell. I think there are some like maturity type of questions and, you know, whatever. The kid was 20 years old. He just turned 21. So I think that's where some of it was. And then there's a whole nother anonymous scout angle to it. And there are some quotes out there from anonymous scouts. And now, again, this is quite the comments, but basically you had some scouts, again, anonymously, which you'll hear Chris Ballard, he's very upset about that angle to it, that said that you get a different side of A.D. Mitchell when he is a diabetic and when he is not properly medicated for some reason, as the phrase is popping into my head.
Low blood sugar. If you've ever been around anyone that's low blood sugar,
right,
the way they act does change.
So and they've mentioned that.
Okay.
And like that was one of the, again, anonymous scouts. So, you know, Ballard doesn't say specifically whether he was upset with what, maybe he watched the NFL Network clip, or maybe he was, you know, heard these quotes about that. But in typical Chris Ballard fashion, because he did the same thing, you know, if anybody watched the draft last year, he did the exact same thing with C.J. Stroud after that pick, but he certainly was fired up about this one.
I don't know. I mean, I read some of the bullshit that was said on I mean, just the typical, excuse my language, our typical league, unnamed sources, you know, bad interview. That's such bullshit. I mean, it f***ing is. It's bullshit. Like, put your name on it. I'm tired of, we tear these young men down. These are 21, 22 young men. And if people out there can tell me they're perfect in their lives, it's crap. This is a good kid. And, you know, for that, for those reports to come out, like, you know, I said it last year. It's bull. I'm sorry. I apologize for the language. I don't, but I.
That's
that was
my
six.
That,
six of them.
That's my favorite part. I apologize for the language. Well, actually, I don't. Turn your mic on. Well, actually, I don't apologize for the language.
Sorry, Charlotte. Sorry, Amelia in the car on this Monday morning. I think, honestly, I think a lot of that is a bit performance act. If I'll be totally honest with you about Chris Ballard.
Theatrics. Yeah.
I think he is upset about the public nature of the anonymous scout. But let's be honest, behind a closed door, the Colts are saying those exact things about prospects. I mean, that is exactly why you create a draft board. It's exactly why Chris Ballard has guys labeled as high character, blue character traits. In a very, very, very much more politically correct way, Chris Ballard later in the press conference said, yeah, maybe he needed to be humbled a little bit. I mean, that's kind of what you're saying from a maturity standpoint. Again, I think some of the A.D. Mitchell comments to me are a little out of line. I don't know, the whole like type 1 diabetic accusation, I mean, like that's a bit much. I think more than anything though, with the Mitchell pick, Andy, it's just you have a question of why, with all these salivating athletic traits, 6'2", 205, runs 4.3 in the 40-yard dash time. Again, you watch his highlights, and you will literally, the jaw will drop at the ease to which he makes some of these plays happen. Why wasn't there more production? Again, in his college career, Andy, he had just three games of more than 80 yards. If you look at his college teammate, Xavier Worthy, who we saw creep into round one, he had 14 such games. You know, you go to Troy Franklin out of Oregon, a name that we mentioned, he had 15 such games. Even if you go to Ladd McConkey out of Georgia, you know, on a very loaded offense, of course, he had six of those games. So that those are the questions that you have. But this selection, it's a very Chris Ballard-y selection. Again, Laiatu Latu, we said it on Friday. To me, that was new Ballard. That was mixing major substance on tape, major substance in the box score with all the sacks and all the pressures, but drafting a pretty good athlete. Mitchell, crazy testing athlete. Absurd. But again, why is he there at 52? Why did you trade back from 46 to 52? You know, if you really, really, really loved him and didn't have any questions, you would have just taken them at 46. So that's where I will label this as the Reggie Wayne pick. Again, it is traits you can't teach. There is a lot of stuff on film that you love. To me, the thing that I think is most impressive about Mitchell is he has done it on the biggest stages. I mean, this guy caught touchdowns in five playoff games. Think about that. A semifinal game as a true freshman.
Well, look who he
a championship
played,
game.
Look who he played with. I mean, but played in Texas and Georgia. Right,
still, I mean,
right.
To be on that stage and to deliver as a true freshman,
sure.
I mean, that's incredible. And so that's where the Colts look at this and think, and Shane Steichen and Reggie Wayne, as you said, they were at the Texas Pro Day. They think, we'll get him in here. We'll continue to develop. We'll continue to kind of mold him. Naturally, there will be just some general maturity from his age. He's 3 months younger than Anthony Richardson. And you're going to grow him with Richardson, and we are going to tap into that. I think that is the thought process here with this pick.
Mitchell did a Zoom meal to tell us about that next hour. Here's A.D. Mitchell on, you know, his thoughts on him sliding all the way here into the draft to where the Colts could get him later parts of the second round.
I'm just kind of pissed. I don't really know what other way to call it. I'm just excited to work, excited to get there. You know, be the best teammate I could be the best person, and ultimately the best player I could be for the team. You know, it's been a long time coming, and all the people that, you know, were here for the moment, you know, those are the people that I truly love and, you know, truly grateful to even have them around.
One thing I didn't love about Mitchell's resume in college is the yards after catch was a very, very small number. That's an element that I would have liked to have seen. Pretty much just kind of a downfield guy. So I think the thought process here is, and if you look at it, you know, Alec Pierce was drafted, what, this kid was 52 overall. Pierce was, you know, pretty similar. I think the difference, what you're thinking here is Mitchell's in a much deeper wide receiver draft class. So if he's in a guy like Pierce's draft class, he gets taken a little bit higher.
Pierce was 53.
Yeah, so very similar. And then I think the thought process, too, with Mitchell is you see a little bit more on film of the ability to do the other stuff. You know, with Pierce, through 2 years, it seems like it's been boom or bust. Either he hits the deep shot or there's not going to be a whole lot underneath there. Again, to me, those big-time moments, I would feel like that is what has to stand out to the Colts the most, of a guy that's not afraid of the big stage, kind of rises to that sort of occasion. So there is a lot of clay to work with here and to mold. And now a lot of it will be on Reggie Wayne to, you know, round out, again, some of the oozing potential that you see.
I think there's two things that stand out about this pick, and then I want to get to Lotto as well and just combine the two. I think with Mitchell, I find it interesting that Ballard came out immediately and backed his guy. And I think part of that, you know, is Ballard being angry or frustrated or, you know, wanting to get this off his chest that, you know, an unnamed source can say something, but no one's really going to battle it back. And Ballard probably felt to a certain extent, whether it be C.J. Stroud last year or this year with Mitchell, that, hey, I'm going to battle this narrative back. I am in a spot, a position of power for the next few days here in front of this microphone. I'm going to say something that is going to be picked up, and it's him backing his guy. So if Mitchell, you know, this is Ballard in the first hours or in the first minutes after drafting AD Mitchell that he's putting on for him. I mean, saying, hey, you're now an Indianapolis Colt. I'm going to put on for you. Don't make me look bad. I mean, sort of thing. Like, we believe in you. You're going to grow up here, whatever it, you know, may need to happen. The other thing, I don't know how you feel about this. You know, there are picks, and this is probably like when you get into, like, if you take an offensive lineman, it's a safe pick, right? We do this every year. There is a sense of, I like what the Colts did here. Let's go to round one and two. I want to focus on Latu and Mitchell. That both of these guys, we would agree, have very high ceilings. Like you watch Mitchell, you watch Latu, and you're thinking, okay, you can envision these guys making plays. You can envision Latu having double-digit sacks and being able to play the run and giving you something on the defensive line that you really don't have. And then you can look at Mitchell and say, we need to be more explosive, okay? Put him around Steichen and Reggie Wayne, Jim Bob Cooter, and now you're going to get a kid that's going to grow up with Anthony Richardson, and he's going to be an explosive player. The interesting thing about them is I don't know how safe of picks they are.
I think Latu's a lot safer than Mitchell. Well, the only reason I would maybe be hesitant is just because he plays a very difficult position to immediately impact. Like, you don't see rookie rushers come in the league and do a lot. But to me, Latu has got a super high floor, whereas Mitchell, boom or bust is such a drastic statement. I don't think it's that with me. I know some people have labeled the Mitchell pick as boom or bust. I'm not going to go there. But again, there is volatility to his resume and to what a lot of people are thinking. You know, guys that are 6'2", 205, run 4.34 in the 40-yard dash, lead the Big 12 in touchdowns, they usually don't hear their name called at 52 in the draft.
Right.
Now, part of that is, again, a deep wideout draft class, but look at the back of the baseball card. You know, again, only 3 games in his college career of over 80 yards. So, you know, is part of that just because he was mostly a deep threat, and either you hit on those deep balls or in college, and we all watch college football, teams trying to throw the ball down the field, probably not the most effective manner that you see quite often. Is that where some of his hindrance there? So I actually think Latu has a higher floor. He just plays a more difficult position.
Well, my only kickback would be injury, that some teams did have him off the board.
Okay. Now,
he played deep again. He takes that away from me quite a bit by playing 2 years at a very high level. You know, he didn't have to dip down to Georgia State or Appalachian State or Tulane or Coastal Carolina or something like that to kind of build himself back up. He went and he played with Chip Kelly at UCLA. But I guess that's just what I find interesting is Ballard, with both of these guys, there might be, to me, a floor that could scare you, but the ceiling is so high on these guys. And not every draft pick is that, right? I mean, some draft picks are, I don't want to pick on Joe Alt, okay? Because he could be a great player and he could be a Hall of Famer and we're sitting here. I don't want to push it off on an offensive lineman, but... You know, these are, again, gamble's not the word, but there are volatility, I think, is the word. That's the word that you use. There's another side kind of to the first couple picks. I like what they did. And then, you know, we mentioned it earlier in the show, going offensive lineman, I don't know if Colts fans were scratching their heads or not on that. You can probably talk to it better than I can. But again, you have Quinn Nelson, injury issues. You have that opt-out. You have Ryan Kelly. Who's going into the last year of his deal. And if you wanted to re-sign him, you know, next season, he's going to be 32 years old. Will Fries is set to be a free agent as well. You have to replenish that. And I think they did. We're going to have, what, Pat Narduzzi on later in the week?
Yeah, to talk about Matt Gonsalves. When you look at the last name, I don't think that's the pronunciation you would come up with.
It's not Goncalves?
According to the phonetic spelling, Gonsalves for him, he had several of the also bleeps that were needed on his draft call with the Colts. I think we're having him on. Is that right, Mark, too,
as
a player?
That's the plan, yeah.
Yeah, I think we're going to have him on. I don't know if it's late. I'd have to double check if it's late this week or next week. But, Andy, Tanner Bordellini in round four, I see the path for him. Center of the future, uber athletic, needs to get some strength. Ryan Kelly is a free agent. Ryan Kelly is, you know, whatever, about to turn 31, 30, something like that.
Next year he'll be 32.
Okay, yeah. So, and, you know, Ryan has mentioned publicly he'd like to play probably 10 years, but, you know, not much further than that. So I think that's where you see Bordellini as a center of the future. Very smart individual, Ivy League offers, et cetera, et cetera. And, again, I don't need to remind anyone of the revolving door around center that Andrew Luck had really until – Ryan Kelly was drafted in 2016. Gonsalves, though, in round three, again, offensive tackle out of Pittsburgh. This is a little bit more uncertain to me in, like, where he fits. I don't have a clear picture of, like, all right, is he a tackle? Is he a guard? Does he compete with Will Fries at right guard for the starting job this year?
He played everything in college.
Is he like, a right tackle the future, you know, post-Braden Smith? 13 starts at right tackle, 11 at left tackle. He only played three games this past season. A foot injury ended his final year at Pittsburgh. There was actually some thought he would come back to Pittsburgh and then decided to forego the final year of eligibility. This is one, you know, again, I'm a little bit more confused on. Now, having said that, the Colts obviously love him. They traded up for him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Andy, we did the exercise leading into the draft. The Colts do not trade up for guys. In round one, round two, or round three, they traded up. Now, it wasn't a huge trade up. It was just a few spots. But again, that is not something that they typically do. It's just interesting to look at, and I think it's a reminder of the draft depth. I made the comparison of A.D. Mitchell was taken one spot ahead of where Alec Pierce was taken, if you want to compare the wideouts. Now, again, this year's wideout draft class, people raved about. They didn't do that with Alec Pierce's wideout draft class. So that means, theoretically, that Mitchell is the more, you know, a little bit more talented player. Well, I guess you could say the same thing about Gonsalves. You know, if you go back to Bernard Raimann's draft, for example, Raimann was taken in a very similar spot as to where this guy was taken here in round three. But yet, as soon as the Raimann pick happened, it was like, oh yeah, that's your left tackle of the future. At least that's the hope. With Gonsalves, I don't know exactly where he's going to fit. Again, the Colts had a Pittsburgh connection. Their new defensive line coach, Charlie Partridge, comes from Pittsburgh. So, you know, when you think about evaluating a prospect, he obviously would have seen this guy work in practice and was on the team with him. So that's a pretty good, you know, in-house vetting process that you have there. Gonsalves, Bordellini, this is thinking ahead, and it's Chris Ballard, I think, kind of backing up what he said in the pre-draft process of the first thing with Anthony Richardson is protect, protect, protect.
Yeah, and we always wondered, you know, would deep offensive line or wide receiver mean they waited? In an offensive line, they did wait a little bit, and even wide receiver in round two, they got to kind of sit there a little bit, they got to move back, and they got to get their guy, they got to wait to rounds three and four to get some guys on the offensive side. Before we go to break here, I'm going to put you on the spot with this one. I noticed Ballard, and I don't know how the Colts always do it, so I'm just throwing this out there. Chris Ballard made all the calls. Did Jim Irsay make any calls to prospects? I know that's something that they thought he wanted to do, at least in the first round or two.
Yeah, I did not see anything released by the Colts, at least on that end.
I did not
either. Don't know if there was something a little bit more behind the scenes. And for what it's worth, we did not talk with Irsay on the Saturday of the draft. I know that's typically, you know, how that operates. You know, I thought, you know, would there be something virtual? But there was nothing on that end. There is a day three pick. I don't know when we'll get to it today, because obviously we want to hit on a lot of Pacers as well. But there is a day three pick that I'm very, very intrigued by. And I like the Colts thinking with what they did with this pick. I think he could be one that provides an early jolt for them. And I thought it was really well done by the Colts. And maybe a little bit of outside-of-the-box thinking with that.
Yeah, we'll tell you who that is. A changing of the guard in the NBA, and what do the Pacers need to do to win this baby on Tuesday night and wrap this series up in five. We'll break that down. We'll do it all next. Hanging out with you a couple more hours here. Wake up call 93.5 107.5 The Fan.
Up 3-1, going for the clinch.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Tomorrow night, 9:30 Eastern in Milwaukee, it'll be the Pacers and Bucks again. TNT and Bally, so no NBA TV drama that we had to deal with last week for game two, and a man that will be up there, and his coverage has been outstanding as expected in the playoffs. He is the one, the only, Tony East. Tony, good morning to you. We'll begin here, and part of me doesn't even want to ask the question, because I feel like if you say one or the other, you undermine the person you didn't say. But have you been more impressed by Miles Turner or Andrew Nembhard in this playoff series?
I agree that it's tough to undermine one of them, but it's Miles for me. I mean, we haven't seen him since he was 24 years old, and I know he was good in that bubble playoff run for the Pacers, even though they got swept in the first round, but this might have been the weekend of his career. I mean, especially given the stakes, I don't think that there's really an argument to have two consecutive awesome games, huge shots over and over, good defense, the Bucks coverage. They've had basically a 30-point court score every game this series, which has been the difference for the Pacers a lot of the time. The way he did every matchup and stabilized the Pacers and was awesome on both ends of the floor, dominant. I don't know if I've seen him have two consecutive games that good ever. And the fact that it's been so long since he's been in the playoffs, I didn't know what he was going to look like. Like, unless he was in the postseason, it was right after, it was during the Turbone. He was starting to four a lot, and imperfect.
Tony, we're going to reset with you here. We're going to reset a little bit. I still can't get over the referee calling Nembhard Neymar.
I'm not over that. We've been laughing about that. We should.
Big Brazilian World Cup fan. Where is Neymar nowadays?
Neymar, who knows?
Is he Barcelona?
Don't ask me.
Is he on one of those Saudi-funded teams now?
Ask Jimmy Cook, okay? Jay Cook would be the one to ask on that.
Jimmy Cook said he ran into, I don't know if he wants me to share this, I guess I will. He said he ran into Shane Steichen late on Saturday night.
Okay, like late on Saturday
night,
establishment,
They were, you know, a little post Colts draft party.
How dare Steichen supposed to be locked in a room watching film of Anthony?
We got to break down the undrafted free agents, right?
Exactly. By the way, our guy Eddie Garrison, I almost said Eddie Gill. Eddie Garrison emails us this: Miles Turner's 11 three-pointers are the most by a center over any two-game span in NBA playoff history. How about that? Like you said, and Tony East joins us now on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Tony, do we have you?
I hope so.
Yes, right, loud and clear. Beautiful. Much better.
Just to add to Turner, and like you mentioned, maybe the best professional weekend that he's had. I mean, he has the big dunk last night. He's hitting threes. They're winning games. People are chanting his name. His family is in attendance and everything else. Turner is fill in the blank. Turner is blank for this Pacers team in the postseason. How would you fill in that blank?
In this series specifically, like, mission critical to their success, right? Like, the way the Bucks, I keep using this term, I think it's perfect. They're just creaky, right? They're slow. They're older. Their front court can't contain both Siakam and Turner, and they are like, all right, let's live with Miles Turner for now. That's not working. I don't know how they'll adjust to try to figure it out, but he's just become so important on both ends. Like, they were trying to attack the paint a lot last night. I think the Bucks had almost 30 points in the paint in the first quarter, which is a big black mark on the Pacers. That was not good. But he stepped up defensively all series long. He's been one of their most important players, and he was among the group that wasn't good in game one and wasn't ready for the moment. But every other game, he's been unbelievably good, and I know you already said it, but the fact that he had the best weekend of his career at maybe the biggest stage of his career at a time the Pacers really need to finally win a series and get off the ground in the playoffs has just said a lot about him and where he is right now as a player and person. I mean, the fact that this is the stat that blew my mind last night. Here are all the players with 7-plus threes and 3-plus blocks in a playoff game over the last 20 years. It is Damian Lillard, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Miles Turner. One of these players is not like the other. It's unbelievable.
It sounds like a future pop quiz question for us
it
here.
Does.
Tony East doing more than just joining us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Again, Locked On Pacers, SI.com. Great, great follow is Tony. Tony, I tried to make the boxing analogy a little bit earlier. The Bucks are wounded. They're up against the ropes, et cetera, et cetera. But I also think it'd be a disservice to the Pacers if we acted like they didn't do some of the early hitting to the Bucks and helped make them this wounded, if you will. And honestly, I go back to the regular season with those comments. Like, I thought what the Pacers did to Milwaukee in that five-game regular season series is they spurred and created and threw more of the gas onto the soap opera fire that the Bucks season has turned into. And yeah, right now they look old and they got, key guys that are hurt. But I think without the Pacers winning 4 of 5, helping get Adrian Griffin fired, causing a lot of like, damn, we don't want to see the Pacers in the playoffs. I don't know if you have the same effect on them come the postseason. Does that boxing analogy land at all?
I think so. And like, even the game the Bucks won, they destroyed the Pacers in game one. Like, every moment or every game with CBS had one moment of like, oh boy, here it is again. You know, the chippiness steps up, or there's a skirmish or a scrum or whatever word you want to use. I think where Carlisle used fracas in Milwaukee during the season, so we'll go with fracas, right? Like, that comes from the regular season. There's clearly something to this that came from whatever, the in-season tournament, the game ball, the Dame Time thing from Tyrese, whatever the reason was, it's a thing. And so then, if you're the Bucks, like, every time the Pacers get rolling and start to kick your butt again after they owned you for 5 games in the regular season. Like, I think at the time of the 5th game, the Bucks had 10 losses and the Pacers were 4 of them. Like, it's just, it's so demoralizing. Like, as soon as the Pacers got their pace going in game 2 and were making a bunch of threes and Pascal was unstoppable and Tyrese was better, that there has to creep into your head a thought of, oh boy, here we go again if you're the Bucks. And now that thought won't go away at all. Like, it's got to be so hard to shake that if you're them, just because of the regular season. So I think you're right about, basically everything that you said with that boxing analogy, just because, like, I mean, what is this now in this season that's 8-7-2 the Pacers are against the Bucks? I mean, at some point the doubt has to creep in if you're Milwaukee.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt. I think it's crept in, quite frankly, if you're Milwaukee. Tony East joins us, SI Forbes Locked On Pacers, talking some Pacers Bucks here. Again, reminder, Game 5 coming your way tomorrow at 9:30. Our coverage here on The Fan beginning at 9 o'clock. You know, we talked so much that this season, Tony, was about the value of getting postseason experience and not just play-in type stuff. A 7-game series, and they're getting that here with Milwaukee. What valuable lessons do you think this team has learned in this series?
Yeah, I think the fact that they had such a bad game one actually illustrates like the biggest lesson they're learning, and that's like what the playoffs is, which is so boring and not exciting to talk about. But look, they can do their best to say like, oh, it wasn't jitters, blah, blah, blah. Like, it was. It really was. They airmailed 3 threes in the first half of game one. And then they've looked way better in every other game. They know what's coming. They know the level of focus and attention to detail that's required. They know what's going to be thrown at them from their opponent. And every young guy is kind of like the perfect example of it. Haliburton took 7 shots in game one. He looked way more like himself every other game. Andrew Nembhard's only not amazing game in the series was game one. He's been unbelievable every game since. Ben Sheppard didn't look very good in game one. He's, like, missed one shot since, I think. He's looked awesome. Like, every guy who had never been in this setting before for them has finally figured out what the playoffs are all about. And that alone was meaningful, right? That was a big part of why it was such a big deal that they made it to the playoffs, is that it pays dividends this year and every other year that they would presumably make the postseason with this core. But now they're going to get even more experience. Maybe it's a longer series of the first round. Maybe it's the second round. It's too early. It's not over yet. But maybe it's a second round series with more pressure and more lights on you and everything like that. That is so valuable to these guys to learn and get that experience. And also, if you're the front office, you know, yeah, it mattered. Like, it's mattered for the last 4 years what's happened in the regular season. That's how they've built the team. But having playoff data on who is good and who isn't and who can be very effective for you in that setting, which is ultimately where you want to go after you trade three firsts for Siakam and have maybe two max players on your team, you need to know that. You need to know what you're building around, what you're building with, what tools are going to be the most important, and they're getting good information there too on, you know, who has and hasn't stepped up to these moments. And I think that's just as valuable for this summer and beyond. You know, it changes the scope of how they approach the offseason. So, you know, I thought it would have been devastating for the front office if the Pacers made the playoffs and got swept and they just learned nothing about what the playoffs can be for this team. So even if they don't win this series, it's, you know, who knows? That's not relevant to your question, but they've gotten what they needed out of the playoffs already, and they will get way more. And I think that is super valuable for them. And of course, winning around for the first time in a decade is never a bad thing.
No, I think that's really, really well said. Honestly, the only bummer is just Benedict Mather in street clothes when it comes to all of that. Tony East with us here, Payless Liquors Hotline. Again, game 5, 9:30 Eastern tomorrow night as the Pacers go for the clinch. Did we get a stopwatch on how quickly Jenny Busek got in between Andrew Nemhard and Bobby Portis?
Holy cow, she beat security over there. That was unbelievable. That was crazy.
Do we think Portis would be suspended for game 5 or no? Is that wishful thinking for fans inside of Cambridge Field? Yes. I don't think he should be, but just curious.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think so. I mean, I don't even know if he'd get ejected in the moment. And, like, you watched the replay and he did a lot of stuff. But
I was surprised how quick that whistle was. I thought the two and I'm not usually a ref guy, Tony, but I thought the two techs on Beverly and Siakam before that, I thought those were really, really just quick whistle-y. And, like, they treat it like a college basketball rivalry.
Actually, in the first quarter, so we have the benefit of hindsight with that. But, yeah, those techs sucked. I don't think Portis would be – I'm trying to think if he did anything that they can, you know, like hands to the face or
right.
something.
Right, that's the only reason why I asked,
But I don't think so.
Tony East with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Tony, this is for you. I'm looking at KB as well. I really want to ask you about the Knicks, but the Knicks need to win a game.
Oh, ask him. Well, no, ask him.
The Pacers need to win a game, and the Knicks need to win
a
game.
We might not talk to Tony before that series starts.
See, and that's a great point. I just think the Brunson versus Haliburton Team USA, Brunson's a beast right now. Their fans are insane with what they did in Philly. I don't know.
Siakam
and Anunoby. I mean, there are storylines galore. I really, and maybe altering styles a little bit, I think is probably fair to say. I really want this series to happen. We're right on the precipice, Tony, of it happening. And if it does happen, what do you make of it?
Yeah, that, I mean, also just from a like storyline of two franchises perspective, that's an awesome series, right? What have they met in the playoffs? Like 13 times? That seems too high, but I think I heard that, but like a lot, right? And that's awesome that it could even possibly be on the table again. Look, I will talk about the Knicks, but yeah, who knows what Giannis and Dame's health status is? Joel Embiid had a 50-point game in that series. I'm not skipping ahead, certainly, just yet in either series, although obviously it looks that way when a team has three chances to win once. But, yeah, I mean, the Pacers went 2-1 against the Knicks in the regular season. I think they'd feel okay about what they can do against anybody just since their offense can be so potent. But I don't think OG played a single time against the Pacers. They caught the Knicks really banged up, I think, every single time they played them. So a little hard to read into that too much, because when OG plays, their defense is so good. I mean, they can guard every position. They're amazing on the glass. Isaiah Hartenstein's had like a resurgent season. He's going to get paid a bunch when he's a free agent. So that's going to be tough for the Pacers specifically. They're going to have to be really disciplined defensively themselves, which has actually been impressive to me about the Pacers in this series. I think 111 is the most they've given up in regulation in the game. 113, that was last night. So that's been good. Like, that number has been successful for them. They're going to have to do that if they play the Knicks, because We've seen this four times now. For 45 minutes, Brunson can get his own shot. Like, he is uncontainable right now. So it's going to be really hard to slow them down. And to keep up, the defense has to be really crisp. They can't have games like game one where their offense is just miserable. And the Knicks have punked two teams in a row in the first round. Last year was the Cavs, who were young and inexperienced. This year right now, it's a good Philly team. Like, they just are bullies who can defend, and that's a good, you know, kind of style to have. It's a very New York team. That's going to be tough for the Pacers to play against, and I think it's going to come down to, can their defense be good enough to keep up? Because their offense has been, but, you know, the Knicks have shown with Brunson that they're tough to cover.
Yeah, 23-4. That's a record with OG Anunoby. That's kind of wild when you look at what one player has done for them since that trade back in January. Tony, safe travels up to Milwaukee, man. I mean, we could be looking at it as early as Thursday with both teams winning. If both teams do win on Tuesday, we'll obviously have to see how the rest of the playoff schedule plays out. But thanks for making time for us, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
It's the Wake Up Call with KB and Andy on 93.5 and 107.5. The Fan.
Off turn four for the final time. Elio Castroneves comes to the start-finish line. Quinn checkers out, and then there were four. Elio Castroneves joins the four-time winners club. He wins the 105th running of the Indianapolis 500-mile race.
I assume hearing that call from Mark James a few years ago, among all of your calls, I assume that does not get too old.
Oh, that's beautiful. Oh, my God. I haven't heard that one before. That's kind of like bringing me great memory, special coming up. We're coming up for the month of May, so it's exciting. So how are you guys doing? Good morning.
We are doing great. Good morning to you. Always enjoy our conversations. Your energy, second to none. And again, as we get ready to start the month of May here in a few days, I love that we get to start this week with you. Is there any of the four, I'm curious, is there any of the four wins that you think about more than the others?
You know, I remember talking to Rick Mears, obviously hero, and he's been with me for so many years when I was driving for Team Penske. And I said, hey, do you have any favorite one? And he's like, well, you know, it's different. It's you always remember the last one, you know, which is more recently. Obviously, the way he did it for me, at the least, was very, very unique, leaving a big team, going to a small team, and end up doing that. So that was, for me, was certainly a memorable one for the 2021.
Elio Castroneves with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. All right, so this is my first time covering the Indianapolis 500. Could you give me one piece of advice? What would that be? One piece.
Wow. One piece of advice. I would say patience, my friend. It's going to be a long 2-3 weeks. Exactly. It's going to be a lot of fun. You're going to see a lot of high speeds and it's incredible. Nothing, I'll be honest with you, nothing when it comes to the day of the race can compare how the incredible adrenaline, the crowd, the fans, and you're going to experience something incredible.
He is the one and only Elio Castroneves, 24th Indianapolis 500, if I'm adding that up correctly, and not to, you know, give out the age, but, you know, he is.
I don't keep counting, but I tell you what, it's a lifetime, right?
It is a lifetime, which is, I mean, hell, your Indianapolis 500 era is older than, you know, some of the drivers in the field when you look at it like that. And you are approaching a special number here, age-wise, here coming up. Not this year, but next year. Obviously, last year at this time, Elio, we talked so much about your close friend, Tony Kanaan, going through his last, which I think it's his last one. I don't know. He seems to come out of retirement. Yeah,
who knows?
Quite often.
It's going to be the last one, but yeah, you're right.
Do you think about that at all for yourself? Like, no. Have you circled anything calendar-wise on when it could be it for you at the 500?
No, I think it's all about, feeling at the moment. I can't wait to be in the race car. People ask me, how you like your new role? Because obviously this year, being with not only Meyer Shank Racing, owning a minority program of the team, and it's, for me, I still feel like, okay, I got to be there. I got to be driving. It's absolutely very interesting. You know how you feel about that. So I can't wait to be in the car, especially the 500. So for me, it's all about feeling. And one day we're going to have to make that call. One day we're going to have to say, okay, now I got to be 100% in another side. But as of right now, the only thing I have in my mind is the number 5.
The new 50, is that's like the new 30, right? It's like 20 years.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
You bought yourself like 20 years, so you're good to go.
I feel great. I'll be honest with you. I feel great. I'm working out every day. In fact, I'm working harder than ever before because since I'm not traveling as much for testing and preparation for other races, so I'm like, geez, it's like every day is like, okay, with my trainer, he's kind of like, man, we're building something here. And I have to be honest. I guess if you take care of yourself, your mind is still pretty much in shape. Everything connects to the right direction for you to continue moving forward.
What does the workout routine for Elio Castroneves look like as you're 48, approaching 50 years old? What does that workout routine look like? I'm interested in that.
No, it's actually, you're right. I'm not, as you mentioned, I'm not 20 years old anymore. So that means you don't push yourself to the limit because, your muscles are not as strong as before. So you kind of like have to pace yourself. You don't care as much weight. You don't do as much sprints like I used to. You basically, do a little longer instead of an hour and 15 or an hour and a half. Now it'll be 2 hours or 2 hours 15. So you do more repetition. The CrossFit that I like it. That's the way I've been raised all these years. You become a little more repetitions and I think that also food. You want to make sure you eat healthy. You want to make sure you drink water, you hydrate, and all these things. You want to make sure you take care of yourself because in the end of the day, you see all these amazing athletes, and especially in tennis, football, or whatever you want to put it on. It's all about taking care of not having yourself injured because if you start doing that, if you're having some injury here or there, you're just going to prolong the issues of getting yourself ready for anything else. So, yeah, that's my mentality right now. I feel great, man. I tell you, I feel ready to go. And as I said, month of May is coming.
I don't think our audience needs any reminder, but that is the voice of the one and only Elio Castroneves with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. And as he said, the month of May approaching this week, so no better way to kick that off than with him on this Monday morning. Elio, you had hung on to that 2021 car, right, for the last couple of 500s, but it'll be a new chassis for you coming up here in a few weeks.
That is correct. I felt that right now we got to start fresh again, have a new group again, which is fine. A lot of the people and the mechanics are from the sports car that we had that we don't not racing this year. So all of the guys sort of like really with a good energy. Everybody's is exciting. I have one guy, Kevin O'Donnell, which is going to be changing my right front. He came back from 2021, and which is great. So we have all this new pieces, old pieces, guys with experience and no experience. And so we're ready for this new challenge for sure. And having new car is great because it's brand spanking new. We know exactly what we need to do. And the only 20 laps that we had around April, that the open test, we noticed that everything is running perfect, which is great. That's what we need. I don't need anything exceptional. I don't need anything that it has a problem. I just need give me the right stuff. Then we can build from that.
So do you already feel pretty good about things, or do you need to get a little deeper into the month? Of course, obviously a lot more laps coming in practice time for you to really sit and go back to the garage at night and think, oh, wait, we've got a car that can be there come lap 200.
Well, we have some work to do, no question about it, like everybody else. But as of right now, we didn't have the stuff that we feel that it's going to be giving us certain advantage or certain exciting to go out there. And we're going to have to try. We're going to have to put it on the car. That's why we have those 4 days, 3 days before qualifying. However, we feel good. We feel that preseason, the MSR been working very, very hard. Now we have three cars, which is great, because when you have more people to share information, you're going to get to the ultimate goal faster and real time, you know, because sometimes people realize on or just rely on data. And, you know, computers and simulators are great, but the real deal is always is the one that gives you the right the accuracy that you do, the speed that you want. So having more cars with Tom and Felix definitely help us to ultimately achieve our goal.
The newness to everything, whether it be the car you're talking about, your job this year, whatever it may be, how much does that energize you, the difference and the newness to some of the stuff you're going through?
What I like it, that's a great question, by the way. What I like it, it's the excitement of the new guys. You know, there is no habit or bad habit. Everybody's willing to go, to learn, to spend how many nights or how many times, you know, working on the car. Because remember, we're talking about two weeks at least, you know, and the preparation. And of course, it gets sometimes in your nerves, you know, you spend the time with the guys and things like that. So the good news is I like that. Yeah, sometimes it's tough when you don't have the people that have the experience. However, that's why we can, that's the part that I come in, you know, with experience, and they can share with them those type of scenarios that, don't worry, we know what we need to do. As long as we keep the energy up, as long as we keep the attitude positive, everything is going to come to our way.
I don't think you need to worry too much about the energy of Elio Castroneves. Again, he's with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Elio, we'll end with this. And to me, even the thought of the question is the ultimate compliment to you. I'm thinking to myself, man, as you look through this field for the 2024 running, unless I'm missing somebody, I believe Takuma Sato is the only other driver in the field that has multiple Indy 500 victories. Of course, you have four. It is such an iconic number at this place. If I had to ask you the question, and again, part of me even asking you the question thinks it's ridiculous. If you could pick one person in this field that one day has the talent and is at an age where four is a possible number for them, who would that be?
Wow, that's a great question. I don't know, because it took a long time for me, over 30 years almost, to get the number four, right? And these people, and it's similar scenario happens before me. I don't know. It's a great, great question. I not even can. I know Team Penske has always been an incredible team, and they have 19 wins. Obviously, if you're thinking about that, they would be the ones to have sort of like a that direction. But as of right now, my friend, I'm gonna have to I can't answer, because I don't know.
Yeah, and honestly, again, to me, it's probably more of a compliment to you than anything, as you look through the field. And, you know, certainly Sato's had some close moments to add to that, but it is quite the remarkable feat that you have accomplished. Elio, always love hearing your voice. Your energy is second to none. Cannot wait to see that smile out there in the month of May, and really looking forward to seeing how everything comes together. A little bit of a new look for you this year. Can't wait to see it all. So thank you for the time.
Thank you for having me. And, well, we're going to have a good time. And watch out, this number five is going to get close.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.